The Phillies almost get no hit by the Astros while the Braves sweep the Minnesota Twins. Is this when the balance of power finally shifts back to Atlanta in the NL East? We'll talk about that and more on today's First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Thursday, August 29th. I'm Lindsey Crosby with Athlon Sports. He's Christian Rau, national baseball writer. And Christian, ton of stuff to talk about yesterday, ton of games, really interesting results. We're going to start, yesterday was really heavy on the NL East, but we're going to start with Philly and Atlanta again before we try to catch some other divisions, because this situation is becoming really, really interesting. We asked yesterday, are the Phillies back? Houston said not so fast. Houston has a combined no-hitter going, I believe, into the ninth inning, end up taking down Philadelphia 10-0. You made the joke about Arrighetti and meatballs. Taijuan Walker, in fact, gets meatballed there. A terrible start. Does not go well for the Philadelphia Phillies. So they're in a situation now. They won the first two games of the series. They walked off, you know, one of them. But you're here now. Taijuan Walker, 6 runs on 13 hits in 6 innings. Again, no hit through, I think the first hit was in the 8th inning. Philly finishes with 3 hits, obviously no runs. All 3 hits were singles. 0-for-5, runners in scoring position, left 7 on base. Here's, I think, kind of the question from this Phillies game before we get to the Atlanta side of this. Should they be concerned going into this series against Atlanta that they are not going to be able to hold on to the NL East?
I mean, you got to be concerned in at least some way, shape, or form, because yes, you performed well other than this last start of Walker, which we kind of expected it, right? We were making jokes about it yesterday, even though we think the Phillies could be back. We kind of expected that. Now we'll see what this start looks like first. We're going to talk about it in yesterday's episode. But when you look at how they performed against the Braves all season long, Lindsey, it hasn't been their best whatsoever. So you're coming into a series that is arguably the biggest series of the year for both these teams after a really tough outing against with the Phillies. So now, in my mind, I think you have to be concerned, because not only did Walker pitch bad, the rest of the bullpen pitched bad too. It might have been just the fact that they led down to, you know, fell down to their level. They knew the game was over. Right. I don't know, but it was just not a good overall game for the Phillies. I expected it to happen, though. I did. I think we were 3 batters into the game, and Walker already let up 4 hits. He almost let up the a leadoff home run to Altuve. So, I mean, it was just...
Hang on. 3 batters in the game, he gave up 4 hits? That's...
Oh, my bad. No.
That's definitely bad. Yeah.
First inning, I should say, he let up. Yeah, good call.
I know what you meant.
Very, very tired. But no, he let up a lot early.
Right.
Walker's not that bad. He didn't leave up that many hits in 3 batters. So, but regardless, it was just not an overall good outing for Walker, and I'm surprised if he's still on the team this morning, to be completely honest with you.
Yeah, it feels like at a certain point they're just going to eat that contract and move on. I know in Dynasty, I finally went ahead, second season he's been bad, I finally went ahead and just ate the rest of that contract. I took the cap hit to go ahead and get rid of him, and he's no longer on my team. For me, here's the reason why I'm concerned if I'm a Phillies fan. So that Braves series, and I wrote about this at bravestoday.com, that Braves series last week, Atlanta had a pitching plan of, we're going to avoid throwing them fastballs, right? We don't want to throw them hard stuff. And I kind of broke down specifically that last start with Spencer Schwellenbach and how all 3 runs he gave up were on fastballs or cutters. It's just, he did really, really well until the very end of the outing at giving them nothing but curveballs and sliders, splitters, things like that to hit, and they just couldn't pull the trigger. And so it was like, okay, the plan here is to avoid fastballs. Spencer Arrighetti didn't do that. 103 pitches, 54 of them were either fastballs or cutters. And Philly had 11 whiffs on those fastballs or cutters. And, 9 whiffs on the fastball. And so I don't know if that's a one-off where they finally adjusted and were looking for off-speed and braking stuff and just weren't getting it, or if that was a situation where there's a genuine issue here. But if they were sitting on braking stuff trying to hit it, well, guess what? The curveballs, the sweepers, they didn't have a single hard hit ball on anything that wasn't a fastball. And so you're in a situation now where, you know, and reminder, hard hit ball is defined as 95 miles an hour or harder. They had three hard hit balls for the game. Two of them were off of Arrigetti's fastball. But again, they also whiffed nine times. And then the other one was off of a fastball of Brian King. And so you're at the point here where I don't know, is Philly's offense just stuck between and they can't focus on one or the other? Is there a genuine issue here? But if I'm the Braves, I feel pretty good, especially coming out of that sweep they just had. I mean, Chris Sale goes last night. Very, very good outing. Again, I mean, he gets the win. He's now 15-3. He goes six innings, six hits, and one walk, but only one run allowed. Strikes out six. Season high in pitches for him, 109. And this is his 14th consecutive start of two earned runs or less. So he passes Tom Glavine and he ties 22-23 Max Fried for the longest streak of consecutive two-run outings in modern Braves history. Definitely the front runner for the Cy Young. And we're going to talk more probably in a happy hour episode about this series and kind of breaking the whole thing down. The Phillies won't see Sale in this series, but Atlanta is rolling right now. Since I had the stat earlier here, what was it? It was since August 10th, the Braves are 13-5. They lead the National League in wins during that stretch. This feels like they are almost perfectly set up for Philadelphia, with the exception of maybe having high leverage relievers available for game one.
Yeah, you mentioned the Braves being on a hot streak. You know, David O'Brien put out a tweet last night after the game. Phillies are going into the Philly series. They've won six of the last seven, nine of their last 11, 12 of their past 16 games. So they are on a hot streak. There's no doubt about that. They have put on quite a feat over the last month of a baseball. That thing you mentioned about the fastballs with the Phillies real quick, I think there is some sort of concern, but I think you also have to go ahead and give a little bit of flowers to Aaron Geddy, because he's been pitching really well lately. And I think that's his third time this season. I think that's what I heard, that he has over double digits in strikeouts on the season. So I think there is some concern for the Phillies, I might add, but I also do think that we got to give some applause to the stuff that Aaron Geddy has had up lately. But the pitching on the Braves side is no joke. If the Braves can come away, I know we've mentioned that all they need is one win to take the tiebreaker, but if they can come away with a series win without using Sale and then have Sale for the next series, this is where it's going to get really interesting, Lindsay, and this is where I think Atlanta can make that step forward and possibly win the NL East. So if they can win this series without Chris Sale, that's absolutely huge, huge. Go ahead and name that car salesman. Absolutely huge.
Yeah, this is it's just, this whole situation is amazing to me. For Philly to be the best team in baseball in the first half and then to potentially not win this division, as a Braves fan, it's gonna be hilarious. But as a baseball fan, like, this is what you want, right? You want this drama down the stretch. And so it's gonna be an interesting series this weekend. Again, we're gonna do a happy hour episode breaking down these pitching matchups and previewing this series. Bunch of different broadcasts. I believe Fox will have the game on Saturday. ESPN Sunday Night Baseball will have the game on Sunday. Going to be definitely interesting there. Okay. Diamondbacks. Arizona Diamondbacks crushed the New York Mets 8-5, including scoring four runs in the eighth. The loss goes to Diaz, which is always tough when your $100 million closer can't really perform there. But the story here, I think, is Corbin Carroll. 2-for-5, both of his hits, home runs, including the grand slam. He has 5 RBI in the game. But almost everybody in this lineup seems to be performing. They went up and picked up Luis Guillorme off of waivers, third team he's been on this season. He goes 1-for-3 playing second base from the 8-hole. De Castillo filling in for Gabriel Moreno goes 2 for 4 at catcher. I mean, they're getting like Josh Bell 1 for 4 there at first base, filling in for Christian Walker. They seem to somehow continue to do this despite all of the injuries. We talked the other day about, would you rather have the Diamondbacks or the Padres down the stretch? With a Carroll, do you think, and I know, I believe you took the Diamondbacks, so obviously you feel like you feel this way, but with a hot Corbin Carroll, do the Diamondbacks have what it takes to make another deep postseason run?
Yeah. And I think he's starting to wake up at the right moments, right? Honestly, I think he's already woke up. I think we're just finally starting to see it. And when I made that argument last week or earlier in the week, Corbin Carroll was like the highlight of my reasoning behind it. He has increased every month this season in OPS. Every single month he has showed improvement. And now we're starting to see like, okay, this guy's the stud that we all know he was. And he's getting hot at the perfect time. So, count me in on Corbin Carroll being one of the biggest reasons Diamondbacks can push forward. And they're doing all this with all those injuries still, Lindsay. They're still figuring it out. I really like where the Diamondbacks sit. Not only is Corbin Carroll doing it, but the entire team is. For the month of August, they are leading all of Major League Baseball in team OPS. So you have to really like where you're at. On the other side, flip side with the Mets, you mentioned Diaz. He got the loss. He also got the blown save. That's his 6th blown save of the season. Unreal. They can't have that, especially if you're trying to get back into this postseason race, which is starting to dwindle down. We're starting to see a couple teams punt, which we're going to talk about later on in the show, but I think we're only down to about 5 teams for 3 spots in the National League wildcard race.
Yeah, and a point of concern, I think, for both teams, maybe starting pitching in this game, Luis Severino, 4 2/3 innings for the Mets, 4 runs on 8 hits, does strike out 9. Very impressive strikeout totals there. Eduardo Rodriguez for the Diamondbacks, 5 1/3, 5 runs on 5 hits, despite only giving up 1 homer. It's always frustrating when that happens, right? Mm-hmm. But you're in a situation here where you kind of have to wonder on both of these teams, do you have enough starting pitching? You saw the Diamondbacks be able to use their bullpen, Kevin Ginkel and Thompson, Justin Martinez. They get through the last 3 2/3 innings with 1 hit allowed. Flip side of that, obviously, you see Reed Garrett, Phil Maton able to keep it manageable for the Mets. And then, like you said, Diaz blows the save, is 6th of the year. So 3rd loss, 6th blown save. But I think the Mets undoing is going to end up being this pitching staff. I just don't quite think there's the horses. And at this point in the race, you can't afford Severino or Manea to have a bad outing. And obviously Severino did. And I just worry that they don't quite have enough. And for Arizona, we saw Brandon Pfaadt turn it on in the postseason last year. I think that you have guys who could do that still. Eduardo Rodriguez could do that as he gets farther away from the injury. But I think if there's any reason to be concerned about these teams, I think it's the pitching for both. The starting pitching.
I agree with that 100%. Yeah, I agree with that 100% that the pitching could be a concern and might be down the stretch for the Diamondbacks especially. And I mentioned about the team OPS being one of the highest in baseball, the highest in baseball in August, but how long can that last, Lindsay? We've seen improvement month after month, but how long can that last? Can it last into October? And will that be enough to be able to, you know, take over for some of the issues that the pitching staff's holding? It worked last night, but will it work if we get into the postseason for a deep run and potentially another bid to the World Series?
Right. Speaking of pitching issues, Yankees lose to the Nationals 5-2 in the series finale. Carlos Rodon here, okay? 5 2/3 innings, 8 hits, 5 runs, 2 walks to 8 strikeouts, has a run scoring balk. He's called for a balk with runners on the corners. And I think it's time officially, and I'm sure a lot of people are already way past this point, but to say the Carlos Rodon contract is a problem. He's 14-9. With a 4.31 ERA this season. That is an improvement because his ERA was in the 6s last year. He started 41 games for the Yankees. He's 17-17 with a 5.08 ERA, but he is being paid $162 million over 6 years. He is making more per season than anybody on the Atlanta Braves. And That's just my favorite thing because nobody makes more than $22 million a year on the Braves. And he's given you an ERA of 5 in that stretch. So, I mean, this is a situation where I know that the Yankees, obviously the offense is amazing. Judge and Soto are the big drivers there. Outside of that, Jazz had another home run last night. Goes 2 for 3 at third base. Do you have, with Cole not looking like Cy Young Garrett Cole because of the injury, Carlos Rodon being Carlos Rodon, do the Yankees have the starting pitching here, given that Luis Gill is also on the struggle bus because he's at a career, he's way past his career high in innings?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be concerned at least some way. When you look at it from the outside looking in, you see the names, you're like, oh, I'm not concerned. But when you really dig in deep and you see what's happened over the past couple of games, over the past month, yeah, there's some concerns. Rodon is a guy that has been really polarizing to me for quite some time. I think even before the Yankees, he had that 2-year contract with the Giants, if you remember that. And he had
dramatically outperformed in year two.
Right. Outperforming year two. But the first year was kind of shaky. But then he got that contract with the Yankees, and it just never really worked in my mind. And we've seen it with the numbers here. I think they're going to be in a really tough spot. And I think this is going to be a nice conversation that you and I are going to definitely have probably multiple times this offseason, talking about the free agencies of the Yankees. And Rodon's going to have to be a big part of that. And I think there's also some other issues as well in the roster we can get to in a second. But when you look at this pitching staff, Garrett Cole, I think he'll figure it out. I think he already is a little bit. It's just not the numbers you'd expect. And it's because, you know, as you mentioned, the injury. I think he'll figure it out. I think he's also going to be pitching like he's almost in a contract year because he's expected to opt out. So I think there's that too. So I think that's going to be leverage for Garrett Cole. So not too worried about him as long as he stays healthy. But the rest of the rotation, you mentioned Gill. We've mentioned Rodon. Stroman's been pretty good. Let's give him that. But there's also been some shaky sides of him. And then Clark Schmidt has also been injured.
Yeah. I do want to point out on Stroman, they skipped him, I think, 2 weeks ago or so to give him some rest. But also, 3.88 ERA, his fielding independent pitching, so when you take out the effects of the defense, is 4.95, more than a run worse. So he is outperforming the inputs, which makes you worry that regression is going to hit at some point in time. Now,
doing a little worse than I expected. Then I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel like ground ball guys sometimes will do that, right? Heavy ground ball guys like he is, a sinker guy, because fielding independent pitching obviously takes out the effects of the defense, and the defense does matter. So it's not a perfect metric when you're looking at a ground ball pitcher, a pitch to contact guy, but still, it is a little bit of cause for concern because he will give up hard contact. And if you can manage to lift it, obviously that's gonna cause problems. So I have concerns about the Yankees rotation. Like you said, I trust Garrett Cole to figure it out. He's not quite there yet. I trust him to figure it out. His ERA is down under 4 already. So trust him to figure it out. Questions about almost everybody else. Nestor Cortez is fine. Do I think you want to start him in game 2 of the postseason? I don't think you do. I think they have guys that they would rather the names like a Rodon or a Stroman that they would start, but do you trust them? That's the big question there. I don't quite know. Flip side of this, Dylan Cruz hits his first home run, goes 2 for 4. His family was there. Always love when that happens. Very excited. Washington between James Wood and Dylan Cruz. This team's getting kind of exciting, and I'm eager to see what they're able to do in 2025 with this young core that they have of CJ Abrams and Cruz and Rodon and Wood and all these guys.
Yeah, and then you figure out this pitching staff. As we mentioned, there's a couple injuries that they're dealing with some younger guys as well. And Mackenzie Gore didn't have that bad of an outing yesterday, and that's been that's been quite a concern lately as well. So if you can figure that out, and this team can figure it out and bring up some of the pitching, and I know you questioned it, and it made me question. I looked into it after the show, but if you can figure that out, Lindsay, I'm excited for this Washington squad. I really am. And I'm going to keep going on record because I really do think this is the case. I think we see them be a wild card competitor next year and potentially be. Go ahead and put me like where the Mets are right now. I can see the Nationals being there next year.
Yeah, there we go. That's you heard it here first. All right, let's get into quick pitch. Quite a few things to talk about, actually. First of all, one of the first games yesterday, the Royals and the Guardians. Royals going for the sweep, leading this game until the seventh. Guardians take their first lead of the series, I believe, in the seventh, score four runs. They win 7-5. They hold on to first place by a single game over Kansas City. Minnesota obviously falls back to third because they got swept by the Braves. We still like Kansas City to win this overall, though, I think.
Yeah, I'm still concerned about Cleveland, too. Like, that was one really good inning. That seventh inning was very good. But that was, like, really their only good inning of the entire series. Kansas City lit it up right from the beginning. I think they had three home runs in the first three innings. They had two in the first inning from Massey and Pascantino. So I really like the Royals still and count me in. And we got mentioned the Twins. The Twins, I think, are going to fall off or at least going to figure something out. I don't know. Not sure, but I saw a stat this morning that made me think, okay, maybe we are going a little too overboard on the Twins. The Minnesota Twins this year against the Chicago White Sox are 12-1, Lindsay. Against everyone else, 60-60.
Ooh. Are we calling them frauds? I mean,
I think we're calling that. Yeah, I think we might have to throw a couple caution flags up on the Minnesota Twins. And maybe that's another reason why I think Kansas City is going to roll through the Central.
Okay, I feel a little vindicated thinking the Twins were a little bit fraudulent a couple weeks ago. I like that. Okay, good. Thank you for that. That was a great stat. Orioles visit the Dodgers, drop the game 6-4. Corbin Burnes takes the loss. That's not the story of the game. The story of the game is the giveaway. The game's giveaway. They had 40,000 bobbleheads of Shohei Ohtani and his dog Decoy, who threw out the first pitch.
And moments ago, the first dog ever to throw out a first pitch was pretty darn impressive, actually. Shohei goes behind home plate. Here comes Decoy with the first pitch.
And it's a strike right down the middle. Little treat, little reward. You tell me he works hard on his game? He works hard on training his dog.
So, I mean, just Shohei, for those of you on audio, Shohei walks out, sets Decoy down on the top of the mound, puts a ball next to him, goes back behind the plate, and then when Shohei signals, Decoy picks it up in his mouth, runs to Shohei, and drops it off on home plate. Shohei said after the game, being an interpreter, that he was that he practiced that. They've been training that for weeks. They even did a dry run in Dodger Stadium a couple days ago. Speaking of, thank you to the Dodgers for that clip. Dodgers and MLB there. But line started at 9 a.m. despite there being 40,000 bobbleheads in a stadium that when it sells out, which it did yesterday, the capacity is only 53,290. It's good to know Dodgers fans can show up early for once. I find it's an interesting, it's a really unique giveaway. Obviously, that dog has really captured everybody's attention ever since the MVP acceptance, when that dog was next to him on the couch and he just didn't acknowledge the dog's name or anything. We found out his first Dodgers press conference. But that was adorable, one. Two, do we really think that there's never been a minor league team that had a dog run the first pitch to home plate? Like, was that the first time it's ever happened?
No, it's definitely not. I think the real winners here, though, are Shohei and Decoy. It's awesome. The losers here, I mean, got to be 50 Cent. I mean, got to be 50 Cent after the first pitches, because Decoy did way better than what we've seen from 50 Cent, some other guys out there. I mean, come on. It's got to be the loser there. But I'm sorry. I love bobbleheads. I love baseball memorabilia. I'm a huge fan of that stuff. I have it all over my house. But I am not going to stand in line at 9 a.m. for, what was it, a 7 o'clock game to get a bobblehead. I'm not doing it. I did see this. That was really cool, though, Lindsay. They had somebody pulled a gold.
They had like 100 or 1,000 or whatever of them were gold, which was just kind of cool. And obviously Shohei got one. He posed with it before the game. He got one of the gold ones. That was always, that's a unique little twist on that. I like that a lot. Okay, first game of the day yesterday, really interesting. Pirates versus Cubs. And this game was certifiably wild, right? Yeah. This was a Paul Skene start. So you're thinking, okay, it's going to be Pirates domination. In fact, they are up early. They have a 10-3 lead going into the seventh inning. Skene's day is done. He gave up three runs, two earned on five innings, five hits, one walk, six strikeouts. Good, not great Skene start. The Cubs won this game 14-10. They scored 11 runs in the final three innings, including six runs in the ninth. to take this game. They get the win over the loss goes to the closer Bednar. He had a blown save and the loss. Porter Hodge for the Cubs pitched the last two innings to get the win. But here's the thing. They've scored 41 runs in their last three games, the Cubs have. This is the most runs in a three-game stretch by any team this season. And most people are not going to guess who the previous holder of that three-game stretch was, because it was the Oakland A's who scored 39 runs back in July. But the flip side here, the Pirates, when they were leading by seven or more runs, had won their last 144 games. The last time they blew a seven-run lead was June 2nd of 2011. Is this the worst loss of the MLB season?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it is. And I think it's the worst in quite some time. So I would say that for the season. Did you see Derek Shelton, the manager of the Pirates, how mad he was in the postgame? I mean, can
I would be too.
Can you blame him? I mean, Skeens didn't have his best start, but he still got six strikeouts. He only allowed three runs. Like, he didn't have his best start, but he kept the team in the game. When he left, he was set up for the win. He was set up for his ninth win. And you go into that ninth inning, you still have a couple run lead. I think it was, 10-7 going into the ninth.
Yeah.
And you wind up losing that game.
10-8.
That 10-8. Bullpen. I mean, this makes me think, if I'm the Pirates and I shut down Skeens now, like, as a fan, you almost can't blame them. Like, why put Skeens out on the mound and let him pitch like this and just to give up all these runs? I feel really bad for Pirates fans because this was a rough one watching. But on the other side, the Cubs, how about Pete Crow Armstrong? How about what he has done has been super impressive. OptiStats came out with something really impressive after the game. Pete Crow Armstrong in this three-game series, Lindsay, multiple three-hit games, scored three-plus bases in a game, or scored four or more runs in a game. No other rookie has done that in all three games in a single series in the modern era, 1901. So pretty impressive stats by Pete Crow Armstrong. The National League has a lot of good young guys coming up.
Ooh, yeah. Pete Crow Armstrong, 4-for-4, four runs, RBI in this game, like you said, and a walk. So he gets on all five times, batting from the eighth spot in the order. And I mean, the Cubs got great performances from everybody. Catcher Christian Bethencourt, DFA'd by the Marlins of all teams, goes 3-for-5 with three runs scored and drives in seven. Just an amazing performance all around. And this is baseball, right? Any team can beat any other team in a three-game series. I really do think the Cubs could be dangerous next year, having the pitching that they have, getting Pete Crow Armstrong playing like one of the top prospects in baseball. I think it all kind of depends on what they do or what happens with Cody Bellinger. Does he opt out? Does he come back? And can they get some better performance out of guys like Dansby Swanson, who went 2-for-4 yesterday? I'm sorry. He went 0-for-4. He walked once. He scored twice, but 0-for-4 yesterday, dropped his batting average to .227. He was batting seventh in the order. His OPS is .667 on the year. Just a situation that's really not tenable. The money you're paying him, you've got to get better production than this out of a guy like Dansby Swanson. But, I mean, definitely a frisky Cubs squad.
So, Cubs are still alive, which is crazy to say, but they're with all the other teams that are punting right now, they're probably one of the only five teams remaining in the National League wildcard race. I think they have the longest shot, but with this huge series win, they are still alive.
They are 5.5 games back in the wild card for the final spot behind the Braves. The Mets are 4 games. So it's just two teams really there. The third team in the wild card standings, or third team out, San Francisco Giants, 6.5 games back. They are officially punting on the year. They put a couple players on waivers yesterday. They put Tyler Matzek, who they got in the Jorge Soler trade with Atlanta. They put reliever Taylor Rogers on waivers. And they put Tyro Estrada on waivers. And that one is the one that's really surprising to me. I know he hasn't had a great year. He's been dealing with some injuries. He's been on the IL multiple times, batting .219 this year. But he's a year removed from batting .271 with a mid-sevens OPS. He had 23 stolen bases and 14 home runs last year. The year before that, he had 14 home runs and 21 stolen bases, batted .260. And he's an ARB one guy. Like, he's not making a ton of money. He's making 4.7 this year. He'll get a, at best, modest pay raise, probably to $5 million for next year. Anybody who claims him right now, you get him, and you have, he's on a free agent until 2027. You get 3 years of Tyreb Estrada, and all it's going to cost you this year is the prorated portion of his salary down the stretch. I think it's around $800,000 or so. Has there been a more surprising waiver placement this year than Tyreb Estrada, question one? And question two, is this waiver process just getting to be a bit too much? Are too many teams dumping quality players this late in the process?
It's getting interesting, that's for sure. And I think the Estrada one is a head scratcher for me, because you mentioned he's not really too much money. And the ARB one thing is wild. That's a very aggressive move by the Giants. I don't get it. I don't understand why. But I'll tell you what, this is one of those waiver moves that maybe he doesn't even just go to a contender. I could see him going to a team that's trying to build up, because this is as you mentioned, this is a piece that doesn't going to cost you a lot of money, and there's a lot of value there too. But interested about see where Taylor Rogers goes. I think that could be a really huge piece, and he could be one of the guys that is like a deciding factor of a team making a playoffs or being a huge postseason addition. So especially like a team like the Astros, we've talked about, do they have enough in the back end of their bullpen? They add a guy like Taylor Rogers, and that conversation might change a little bit, Lindsay.
Yeah. This is something where, like, I could see the Yankees making a claim. Estrada doesn't have the arm for third, really doesn't have it much for short. He could play second base. You can probably use him some at first. He's not the usual profile of a first baseman, but like, I could see quite a few teams saying, hey, we're going to go grab him because we have multi-years of control of him. It's an odd move. This has been First Pitch for Thursday, August 29th. If you are listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. Really does mean a ton. Helps folks find the show. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Leave a comment down below. Hit the notification bell so you know when we drop a new episode. We're going to try to come back to you this afternoon for a happy hour talking about the Braves and Phillies, this 4-game series, the pitching matchups, things like that. But until then, this has been First Pitch.